I've spent my whole life at sea, and I'm pushing age 73. Now there's only one place that was meant for me. They call them ragtime Willie. We're gonna soothe away the rest of our years. We're gonna put away all of our tears. That big rocking chair won't go nowhere.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Householding Show with Marge and Harriet. Good morning, Marge.
Good morning, Harriet.
Well, good morning, everyone. Today's topic is going to be householding, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I don't know if we're going to get to tomorrow, but we have in our studio today two guests that I think have totally captured the spirit of householding. Our first guest is a personal guru of mine, whether she wants to be or not. It's Virginia Yoder of Yoder, Oregon. Virginia is 81 and is the mother of six children, and Virginia has been living on the same 50-acre homestead since 1946. From everything I know about Virginia, it would be safe to call her a household, although I'm not sure she called it that back then. So good morning, Virginia.
Good morning.
And our second guest is Sarah Doemling. Am I saying that right?
Doemling.
Doemling. Who I understand grew up close to Yoder, Oregon, and which is on the east side of Malala. And she has been a longtime friend of the Yoder family. And Sarah is 62. She is the mother of four children and has lived in Polk County, Oregon, which is northwest of Salem, since 1987, where she manages a household along with 1,400 acres of sustainable forest. So good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
So, we wanted to invite these two women because we felt they represented a way of life that many men and women today seem to be nostalgic for, specifically in the urban environment, sort of growing food, preserving, beekeeping, backyard husbandry, cheese making, and a whole lot more. And all of it, as we promote or suggest at the Householding Show, with an eye towards the environment and social justice. What did it really take, and did they enjoy it? Do they see it as viable for today's times? And so that's what we're going to be talking about, and we have some questions. So we're going to turn it to them and start with the first question.
And I'll start and ask Virginia a question, and I've known Virginia for a long time because she has been a master food preserver way back when, and she used to help test pressure gauges out in Malala. She'd pick up the tester and drive it back. And anyway, she has a long connection to Oregon State University, and her parents, her family, sometimes some of them have graduated from OSU and used. Well, anyway, it's just a fascinating history. But I was very interested in how, Virginia, how did you come by the life that you grew up on the coast but ended up in Yoder and married a man who, you know, the Yoders. And what were the rewards? And did you enjoy that life?
I did enjoy that, my life. I think I didn't have too much expectations so that I wasn't disappointed, but I married into the family, and we had a lot of family around us, and there wasn't any time that I felt isolated. I felt that I helped in the church, and I helped some in the school, and when our family came along, I was busy all the time, and I didn't really have too much time to think about myself, I guess.
And I think that's an answer for many young householders, is finding the key to contentment in the lifestyle.
Yeah, keeping busy. married into this lifestyle, but I was curious, Sarah, like, Where did you learn the skills, let's say, to, when we talk about, you know, householding, the various things that goes into it, how did you learn how to do that? And did you learn from family or from school or are on your own?
I think I primarily learned from my mother because I grew up on a farm that had a milk cow and chickens and a garden and fruit trees. And, you know, you canned in the summertime and the neighbor lady came and we sat in the backyard and peeled pears and worried about the yellow jackets. And so a lot of it just was kind of automatic from the way I grew up. And I didn't go to home economics class because my mom thought I needed to take the academic classes and she could teach me what I needed to know at home about home economics. And then it just seemed right. I couldn't wait when I got married to plant a garden and have my own. And I remember my father came and helped me with my first garden. And I think I added to what I learned over the years because I had sort of an inclination to enjoy that sort of thing. So I just did it. And you just get more ideas. In different places you live, you get new ideas about how you can be efficient and have fun.
Yeah, I think that that's something, when you say you were given to it, I think that that's really true, that some people find a natural fit between living that life and some people do not, and forcing one on the other or anything is kind of a difficult way to go about it. But, and I also thought it was interesting when you said about your mother taught you, because I've been reading a lot about the history of home economics, and there was certainly that sense that some people felt that teaching it in school was the appropriate way to go, and sort of how does it expand into the larger community, and some people felt like it was the purview of the home itself. But as we lost our mentors and there weren't people there anymore to teach us, you know, it may, and even now might be something that we would think about.
And Virginia, earlier you were talking about you didn't feel isolated, and I want to kind of maybe go back to that, because, and you talked about, you know, you had neighbors and you started your family, but did you have to go to your neighbors or the larger community to learn some skills, or did you just know it, how to plant everything and harvest it and then preserve it so carefully?
Well, actually, I took quite a few. I was involved in 4-H, and so I took quite a few of those programs, and when my children were old enough, I taught them, and I learned a lot as a leader. And my husband had helped his mother, and he was really good to help me with the canning and peeling and all of that.
So it wasn't just woman's work. That's good to know.
No, he really didn't, although he wasn't too much on the dishes. But he was willing to help get things ready.
Mm-hmm. And we talked on the way in, you had a huge food dryer that your father or mother-in-law had, and you brought it onto your farm?
Well, yes, it was his grandmother's, actually, okay, to begin with. And you could put 2 or 3 bushel of apples in it. I didn't do pears in that big of quantities, but we did apples, and neighbors and relatives came and used it, too. We did plums, made dried prunes, and
you still have that? Fun.
Well, we do, but we don't use it. It's the stove that was there to produce the heat kind of burned out, and so I just have a small dryer now.
compared. A newfangled one.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to your pantry. I've seen those big buckets of fruit. I'm always impressed, shocked almost. So I understand you both had gardens and livestock, had or have still. And did that supply the majority of the food that your family ate, Sarah?
different times of our lives, I guess different amounts for me, but always I was striving for that. It was kind of a game to see how much you could do on your own and how seldom you could go shopping. But I do want to affirm what you said, is that for some people this is a game and fun, and for other people it's not. So, no, I'm not on the soapbox. Mm-hmm. I just think those people who don't think it's fun to try to make a good dinner out of what you have in the pantry, that's fine, because there are lots of wonderful restaurants that serve wonderful local food, and there are lots of people at the market where you can get your food, and they need to be supported. So it's just, if your inclination is in that direction, it can be a lot of fun. And it's something where you can include your children and you can include your family, and it's kind of a sociable way to live, because lots of these projects need more than one person. And but yes, I mean, I still am playing the same game of producing as much as possible. And also the neighborhood exchange systems are useful, because probably same as Virginia, but up and down my road, a lot of the things are available that I'm not so good at, but my neighbors are especially good at. And or have fruit that I don't have, or have the eggs and I have the raspberries or something. And about not being isolated, it's sort of, or how you learn it, you just talk about your gardens to everybody else who has gardens, and they tried this and it was great, and they had a new variety of tomato and that was great. So you're always learning new things. And
well, yeah, I find it interesting, because in the city now, for those people who are attempting it, you know, it generally is kind of a very weekend sort of endeavor, because not as many people sort of approach this as a lifestyle. And so it's quiet on the streets during the weekday. And so I think for urbanites who are attempting, and I guess I could be personal there, sometimes it is isolating, because you're playing, you know, little house on the or little house on the main street or whatever it is, and everybody is sort of busy working. So there is something about that, as this kind of life emerges, it developing the social interactions and the relationship. But it's definitely expanding, and I see it all the time. People through the internet putting up food that they have, things they want to exchange, recipe exchange. So it's happening, but and I do understand this, the game you're talking about, the fun, you know, like I'm always in the kitchen playing Iron Chef, like, no, I won't go to the store, let me open up, what can I do with what I have? And it is so anyway, it's good to know that somebody else is playing those games.
Yeah, well, I was just reminded of the community gardens. I was just up, and I live close to the one in Lake Oswego near Lusher Farm, and there's like 100 plots up there, and all variety. One was just full of poppies, and then others were just vegetables. So, you know, some grow flowers, and some grow fruits and vegetables, but it's just, I think it's part of that community. You're up there, and you can say hello to somebody else digging in the dirt, so the attraction is there. And Virginia, I wanted to ask you a question more about, you know, your preservation history. And you've pressure canned and dried foods and put up all the fruits. Did you do everything, or did you find that you could share with neighbors and friends, or were you good at, didn't have to trade a jam for a can of peaches?
I can't say that. That I traded as such, but if we had an abundance of something, we would share it.
Okay. Was that before it was like abundance of the produce mm-hmm. from your garden, and mm-hmm. then your neighbors and friends would mm-hmm. put it up themselves?
Mm-hmm. They also shared put up stuff. I know.
Gifts. Now, were preserved foods a holiday gift that you
well,
gave away?
Sometimes okay. we did that. Uh-huh. I like to make a lot of different kinds of pickles and dried fruit. That's one thing that we've given. In fact, I sent a package of dry fruit to my grandson who was going. He was leaving Sunday night to go to Yap for 3 weeks, and he he was told that that would probably be a good thing to have a little along with.
I didn't ask this question. I wasn't going to ask this question, but I'm just curious for both of you. Did you work outside the home, or was it pretty much focused within the home? Both of you, I'm curious. Sarah?
Well, the very first year of my marriage, I was of the generation that thought we could do it all, and I learned very quickly after my first child was born that I was teaching school, that I felt like I couldn't do both jobs well. So I quit, and I never went back. And my husband always said, when I thought we needed the money, you save more by staying home than you'd earn if you'd go to work.
Hey, you could talk to my husband. I think he's getting it, but I don't think it was as smooth a transition. When I sold my restaurant, I didn't know you were never going to go back to work.
I had lots of support for staying home.
Yeah. Well, and Virginia?
My husband encouraged me to stay home, but when our youngest child was into grade school, I thought I'd have time to teach kindergarten, and so that's kind of and I did that for about 15 years until he was ready to retire. And so I was a at-home mom most of the time.
So when did you start teaching? I didn't get when did you start teaching kindergarten?
When my youngest child was into grade school, I think about the third grade. I thought that they were kind of on their own after that.
Oh, okay. So you had six children. So you were in that kitchen for a while, or in the garden before you went to work. But okay, and you hit on this a little bit, Sarah, when you said it was a kind of a game not to have to go to the grocery store, and that's, you know, certainly true for me, that I want to as much grow or make or buy my food directly to the farmer as much as I can. So you were saying that that's true for you, but why is that true for you, I guess? And is it connected to something other than loving to use what you grow?
Yes, it's all part of a bigger picture of husbanding or householding the resources that we're blessed with in Oregon. And when it all fits together in How do you use all the resources that are necessary for a household, and that includes energy and water and all those things that are, we're becoming more aware of their scarcity. And so all my little routines are just looking to live as lightly as possible and discovering that it is at least as much fun, if not more fun, than sort of thoughtless use of our resources.
I think there is I find myself paying more attention of what's on my plate. And I was talking with a friend that has a community garden, and she couldn't get up there, and I went up just to plant a tomato. And she had all this spinach that she said, help yourself. And it was just huge. So I took a big bag of spinach home, and I cooked it up, and I ate it with some locally made cottage cheese, and I felt so pious. I mean, it was just really amazing. But I think
that way too if I ate spinach and cottage cheese.
Well, I wasn't thinking about the nutrition part of it, but that spinach was to die for. And I think as more and more people taste local and know the difference, and a growing appreciation for the fine taste as well as all the sustainable issues. You're right.
Well, and I think it's something that I really want to pass along to my children and my grandchildren, that this kind of life is the best. I mean, that it really is a good way to live. And at the same time, if we do this, they're more likely to be able to live this way.
Amen. I mean, that's, you know, sometimes, and I think I take the joy out of it for my kids when I'm in the garden and I start railing about, you think I like this? No, you know, it's not that I don't. But
I have a great story.
Go ahead.
My daughter, I have one daughter and three sons. All my children had to work in the garden, and they all groused about it. And my daughter, as a teenager, said, I'm never going to have a garden, too much work. And now you can't keep her out of her garden.
There you go. I hope you kids are listening.
Yes. Well, it helps to have the skills because Virginia and I were talking about how you, growing up on the coast, grew up in the garden, learned kind of how, you know, to understand soil and garden stuff. And I didn't. And so I struggle with learning. And I know Harriet has spent years, you know, doing it by and learning as she went. And I, you know, I just feel like I'm much better in the kitchen cooking it. But well, Virginia, do you, how about your kids? I mean, are they... do you teach them well?
I think that every one of them have gardens. That's something that they grew up with and liked going out and being able to pick a tomato to eat on a, you know, just for a snack. So I think that they appreciated what we did. Sometimes it got a little hot when you were hoeing, but that just goes with the... with having fresh vegetables, and the taste is so much better than any other way.
Well, then, so that's a question. Do you see this? I mean, it sounds like you both do, and so maybe you can just speak on it as being a value for today's generation. And in adding that, you know, where do they learn? I mean, both of you were talking about learning from your mothers and fathers. And certainly there's been, you know, extension and, you know, home ec or whatever services have been out there. And they're showing again, they're coming up now. But do you think this is a lifestyle that can be translated to today's generation and in the urban population? And where do you think everyone's going to learn? I'll send it to you first, Sarah.
Well, I certainly think it should be, and I think it's probably more important now than it was when we were young and having families, because the alternative to fresh local food is a lot worse now than it was then. And that's another subject, I guess. And about learning it, I guess most of us who've done it all our lives are more than happy to share. It's kind of fun to share what we know and help folks. I've done some of that just on a casual basis, but I have thought that home economics should go back into the schools because so many young people don't have a clue. Otherwise, Virginia?
Well, I agree with that, too. The home economics that I know that's gone back into the Malala High School is really more a culinary in learning how to prepare food and run a restaurant and that type of thing rather than for your own use. But I guess that's necessary too, you know, that to learn how to do that.
That's interesting because the home economics, you know, it the value, you know, how it's perceived value changed from the time that I started in the late 60s, but that it had to produce something, it had to be economically viable. So you had to teach a skill that could go out and earn a living. It was no longer skills that would be for householding. You know,
they forgot that you could save more by staying home than you could make by working.
And all the skills that it takes, whether you work or not, you still have to know how to do the laundry. Or you still need to prepare a meal unless you wanted to be dependent on the marketplace, and then it costs more. So it's a double bind in terms of what skills we need, where can we get them outside of our immediate families, and if it's not out there, how are we going to... You can't just go to the internet for everything.
You know, it's interesting because the book that I've been reading, which is really wonderful, and when I get done, I'll give it to you, Marge, it talked about home economics and this schism that always existed somehow about whether or not this was a science that was going to be taught that in some ways distanced the concept of home science as anything related to the realm of the domestic, but more as things that can be translated into skills into the marketplace. And that there was almost always a kind of riff there to the extent that, you know, since the early 1900s to the point where, you know, universities would not teach classes on cooking because it hearken too closely to the domestic. And there was constantly, you know, a conflict there. And one that, I'm sure for a lot of reasons there was validity to it. I mean, understanding the sensitivities, but I think it's interesting, and it is certainly time given our, you know, the issues that we're confronting, like you're mentioning about today being very different than years past, where not knowing these things can be a lot more problematic, that we could re-enter the schools with a much more enlightened view of what the opportunities were. So we're going to turn that over to you, Marjorie, and see that they do something about that. Because
yeah.
Marjorie is by profession a home economist, and though she says she's retired, we never believe her. And I guess we're going to close very quickly with asking, what advice can you offer our listeners out there about the pros and cons of this life and what you think the opportunity, well, the pros and cons. Virginia.
Well, certainly it's a satisfying position that to do things for yourself and produce and have fresh fruits and vegetables and understand how to use them and to preserve them is really, I think that's something that I enjoy, and so I think other people would enjoy it too.
Did you see it as being really hard work? I mean, in terms of being a con, because it is hard work.
It is hard work, but it's a satisfying to have those things that you can go to and not have to spend $2 or $3 for a can of soup or corn or. Mm-hmm.
And Sarah?
I think it's satisfying, and I don't think hard work's bad. I think it's fun. Because if you don't work, you don't have the wonderful satisfaction of sitting down and resting when you're done.
And you think about the health issues that we have now that are related to inactivity, you know, too many calories in and not enough energy out.
Yeah.
That wasn't a problem back when people were working and just using their bodies.
And I think it's totally satisfying in the sense that if you're running a household and a family, you're basically calling the shots. You're in control of your own show. And there's a lot of satisfaction in that. And you make mistakes, but you also have successes. And you can go look at that basement full of food in November and think, we're set for this winter. It's a totally good thing, I think.
Well, you wouldn't be able to, you know, these are my positions, and I totally agree, and I think that it's applicable, and I think that people are trying to figure out how to do it, and really, I'm going to tell them to all come live at your place, because I heard you volunteer to be a mentor, and with 1,400 acres, I think you have room. And I've been to Virginia's house. She got a couple of extra rooms, so we're just going to, but...
An apprentice.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, well, till next time, thanks for tuning in to The Householding Show with Harriet.
And Marge.
And we hope we've inspired you and that our guests have as well. So, see you next time.
Would have been nice just to see the folks listen once again to the stale jokes. That big rocking chair won't go nowhere.
KBOO Portland.
This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
In Iraq, a car bombing Wednesday killed 30